Cannon. A great ball opportunity here. It's in. It's Patrick McElhinney.
I'm feeling good.
Here's Hooban. And Hooban gets it.
Would you like to be back? Yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Hello there, welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. So, James O'Toole, Johnny McDonald in studio. Lads, we know what we have to do now. Two games left, one win. Very simple, Johnny. Republic of Ireland, go to Geneva, win the match, happy days. Or better still, wait till Denmark come to Dublin. Straightforward.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely need one. Two draws, no good.
Two draws,
we need one win.
Easy.
Easy peasy. We don't score too many goals. And it's definitely going to be difficult in Geneva to win the game. Definitely. Definitely after looking at the other night in relation to possession, of keep possession of the ball, we're definitely going to be on the back foot. Sometimes we play better like that. How do we play? We play in the counter-attack, working off set pieces. We were looking at the other night with Egan, the uprising stuff. But definitely going to be a hard assignment for us in Geneva. Might be a little bit easier. I don't mean a little bit easier, but being at home against Denmark, but it'd be nice to get the job done and get a victory, but really going to be really, really difficult.
James, my miss of the week is the Irish performance against Georgia.
I'm not surprised.
I just lobbing that incendiary in there to get the conversation.
I'm not surprised. It was tough to watch.
And Mick McCarthy has been irked by the reaction of some people. We don't know who in particular, you know. Yeah, but obviously it was a poor display given you know, it was not saying that it was Georgia, but people were perhaps a little excited after recent performances under Mick McCarthy since his return, but we struggled to retain
it. It was the poorest display under McCarthy so far, it has to be said. I think at one stage in the first half, I think they had 62% of the ball. 10 minutes into the game, I was looking kind of going, oh no, here we go. This is going to be one of those games where we are going to struggle from start to finish. There's a couple of people mentioned the pitch. Again, we seem to, I don't know, like the rugby mentioned the pitch the other day before the Samoa game as well. And then we're mentioning the pitch before football. I don't know what it is about pitches that we have.
But Georgia got the point against Denmark as well, didn't they?
Yeah,
they did. Denmark so probably
not
a lot more possession.
Place to go to.
You know, so.
But at the same time, I think the negativity around it, Mick has obviously picked up on it. I've no idea. I don't know. We haven't seen full press conferences, so he's obviously picked up on it out there. But if you're Mick McCarthy and you're an Irish football fan and you want to go and watch matches and stuff like that, at the beginning of this group, if you had told Mick McCarthy you have two games to get a win, you get that win, you're qualified, I think he would have taken it.
No well, question. he said as much in his interview with FAI
TV. No question, you take it. There's no question for that.
You know, you're looking, you know, we've got to Denmark at home, Switzerland away, but, you know, Switzerland have three games, haven't they, with the away to Gibraltar is the last match, isn't it? So they're going to pick that up. They have a chance of getting 9 points. Obviously, Denmark have a chance of getting six, so have we. But, like, I mean, early on, I would have said getting the goals early against Gibraltar and scoring goals, the goal difference could be the one, could be the Achilles heel for us. It really could. And, you know, we've a goal difference of four against Denmark's 11 and Swiss have five, but they've also got to play Gibraltar. You know, I know even after us, it might come into play. But
are you worried about our prospects now of progressing to the finals?
No, I, at this stage, I'm saying we're really, really difficult to play against. And it's the Swiss will know, and the Danes will know that we're really, really difficult to play against. And we are quite capable of playing and nullifying teams and slowing the game down and not playing particularly well and maybe getting a 1-0 win. We are capable of doing that, and I hope we can do that. And it doesn't have to be like Brazil or Argentina or sexy football. We need to qualify for the bigger picture all round. I agree with you, James, to say that if we had 12 points at this stage in the group, going to Georgia, people are giving out. Somebody said it was the worst match ever in the world. You know, I think it was Eamon Sweeney in the Indo said they had a right go off, Mick. I think it was in the Indo. But look, you know, we've two games to get one victory.
Two games to get one victory. You take it.
Absolutely. And I think we definitely, I'm not writing us off out of this. Mick will get us right. The players are 100% behind Mick. I'd say 100% they will give everything. It's team selection, the way he plays, how we play, what way we play, as I said, and who he plays. But, you know, we've 50-50 chance here.
How impressed were you, James, by Aaron Connolly? His short cameo, two chances?
Yeah, I thought he was quite good. I think his second chance, the most obvious chance that people thought he should have scored with, again, the pitch acts up on that badly. Like, the ball just bounces at the wrong time. He does strike through. He strikes through true as possible, like, side net. I don't think the keeper saw it coming. He hit it so early as well. But he's done what we expected him to do. He did exactly what we expected him to do. I said it to you guys before we started. 10 minutes into the game, we didn't think he'd come on because of the possession stats. We need the ball for him to be effective, and we didn't have the ball. So I thought there may be a chance where he won't get this game today. He will not go on today. And then he went in, and he was a bit like what Shane Long used to be for us. Hold on the halfway line, lob a ball in behind, and he is going to win the foot race to it. And Aaron gives you that little bit as well. Like, he's kind of, if we need an out ball, he's there, and he's willing to run. But as well as willing to run, he's a good head on the shoulders. He understands what's around him as well. So that's good, and he showed that in the brief cameo we had the other night.
With the game I watched when him playing against Spurs, his movement was very good. You know, the second goal, the movement off that, his ability to for the first goal to flick it and spin around and get the second to tap in, knew exactly what he was doing. Definitely has pace. It depends what way we're going to play.
Yeah.
And if he's our out ball, it's not going to be an out ball, a big diagonal ball up in the air to knock down. It's on the ground in behind. So we're going to have to make sure the Swiss are high up the pitch to leave the space in behind, create the space, deliver the ball, and he'll be in. And again, confidence is a major part of this. You know, he's flying at the moment. He's in great form. No different, as I said, if it was a horse, you'd race your horse. I'd put him in against anyone at this stage. His confidence is really high. And I wouldn't fear him going in to play against anyone at this stage. And he would give you an out ball. He definitely would.
That's what
his movement, his movement off the ball is fantastic. Now, in saying that, Georgia had gone three at the back as well, so there was a little bit more space, you know, at that time. There was more room.
But two of the balls were put between the centre halves, and he got onto it.
But I'm just saying, his movement, and he will read him, but he definitely is a way out. Different than Collins, definitely different than Collins.
And the soundings from Mick post match seemed to be that he was heading in the direction of including him in the starting 11 against the Swiss in Geneva. Hey, tell you what, let's go to Geneva. Have you either of you guys ever been to Geneva?
No,
me neither. Let's find out what it's like, shall we?
No.
John Kenny is on the line. Hiya, John. What's Geneva like?
Hi, guys. Yeah, it's good. I'm actually down in the tunnel area here. I was hoping to speak to you from the commentary position high above the ground, but they've kicked us out because the Swiss are in training now, so that's why you probably can hear this hollow effect. So 22 degrees today.
I thought you were going to get a run out,
tomorrow is going to be pouring rain throughout the afternoon. no chance. There's going to be pouring rain tomorrow, and by match time, apparently, it's supposed to dry up. Beautiful stadium. 30,000. It's going to be full. The atmosphere will be great. In deference to Georgia, the ground there, it's big, it's old. I know they've done it up in the last couple of years, but they had a running track around it. Difficult place to report from. Tomorrow it's just going to be so much easier. But in terms of the match itself, we know the Swiss are going to have a lot of the ball. Will he play Connolly up front? It looks like he will. They'll probably make a couple of changes. Enda Stevens coming back because obviously he's back from suspension, and Connolly will start up front. Now, what he's going to do in midfield, we don't know. He's very loyal to his players, we know that. One in particular, James McLean, is under pressure. Maybe Hendrick is under pressure as well. And with Whedon last the full 90 minutes, having run his old legs through the Georgia game. So that's another question mark out here as well. But it's likely Stevens and Connolly will be the two changes that we'd know about.
OK, let's get the thoughts of Johnny McDonald on that. Into Stevens to come back in at left-back. That would mean Matt Doherty losing out. Glenn Whelan, the legs getting on in years. Is there another game in him a few days afterwards? And we seem to be suggesting that Connolly will start. But if he does, what selection do you think he'll go with, Johnny?
I definitely think I would try and find a place for Matt Doherty. I would definitely try and find a place for him in the team. Stevens has come in, he's played there. You know, we can depend on him. We know exactly what he can do. He can up and down the line. With Connolly up front, if we're playing him up front, we need somebody that can pass the ball into him, that can thread a pass into him, that can just put a bit, as you say, play between the defenders for him to get on to. Huron might be the man to do that in a central role. I think he'd play Hendrick. Whether he play Whelan, I don't know. I would think with Doherty, the way he's playing, and he's playing regular, I would try and find a place for him.
Would Jason McLean losing out?
I would have a look, because he's so adaptable. He can play. He could play.
I think that's one of his problems. You know, I think that's actually one of his problems, is that he has adapted to whatever position he's gone into. He went into left full the other night, and he was very, very good. I think that's part of Doherty's problems, unfortunately, for him.
He could play central, you know, he could play as a holding midfielder. He could play here on the front. Now, whether I think he played with a two and a one in midfield, if that makes a bit of sense. But two holding midfielders and one off the front man, one off Connolly. I think he played James. I definitely think McLean will play.
So Aaron Connolly will be an out and out striker in your view. He won't be necessarily operating off the left in your selection.
He might, but the type of player he is, you know, this false number nine where he.
He might, Johnny, because, you know, the feeling here is that he might actually play on the right hand side, because it's got to be a much more defensive shape to this team, because we know the Georgians had an awful lot of the ball the other day, and McCarthy was given out about the fact that we didn't hold on the ball too much. But we know for sure that the Swiss are going to have an awful lot of ball in this game. So it's got to be a more defensive setup. You know, could we think about maybe a Jack Byrne in there maybe late on the game to, if it's 0-0, to get a ball through to Aaron Connolly? That might be an option.
We definitely need someone to
But I think it's going to be a very... Yeah, definitely. But I think it's got to be a defensive, very defensive setup initially in this game. Ireland are going to soak up an awful lot of pressure here, I think.
And that's why I think Doherty might... I would find a place for him in the squad, because he might need to sit someone in front, the two centre-halves. He has legs, he can get round, he's quite capable of keeping the ball. But this group,
he may be thinking of a two in front of the back four.
That's what I'm saying, the two and the one, John, the two holding midfielders and the one. So it could be Hendrick and it could be Doherty. I don't know whether Glenn Whelan will have the two matches in him, over a short period of time. The team is quite capable of keeping the ball as well, John. I've no doubt about that. We can definitely keep the ball. We can get it up the pitch and get, you know, set pieces, free kicks and corner kicks, and that can be a good positive for us.
John, the negativity...
Yeah, the two press conferences are coming up very shortly as well. Sorry, just before you go on about that, James, just the two press conferences are coming up, and I just want to talk to the two managers shortly about kind of the negativity that's been around here. We know that we saw that on the FAI TV about McCarthy saying that he can't understand the negativity around the team. That's kind of an echo, a sentence that's been echoed by Johnny Sexton out in Japan about the Irish rugby team. He says he can't understand the negativity surrounding the Irish rugby team out there. That's a kind of different thing, I think, in terms of the rugby. It's like this team of us, that seems to be a negative for a lot of supporters, thinking, okay, we say we don't need to be like this. This is a different scenario, I think. You know, looking at the Irish display, that's, I think, the reason why people are negative. I think in the rugby terms, I think it's just a slightly different criteria. Well, he's to be negative. So, but it'll be interesting to hear what McCarthy's thoughts are about that particular statement that Sexton made out in Japan.
But that's what I was about to ask you, John. The negative, like we were just speaking about the negativity. How has it come true out there? Like, has it been through a press conference? Is that where Mick's picked up on this?
Yeah.
Is there anything there that, is it a case of they may have gone walkabout with the fans after the match?
So.
Or how has it come about? Like, I've never known it to be like this in a camp when they're away for so many days.
He got a little tetchy after the match, all right, the other day, where he asked one in particular, was he... has he ever played international football or played football at a professional level? Of course he hasn't, you know, and that's not really the point, is it? You know, I think it's more of a kind of a social media backlash, and maybe he's been looking at that because the comments I've seen on social media have been pretty negative about the display and about the fact that Ireland couldn't keep the ball. So, look, you know, they got to put all that kind of stuff behind us. I don't know why he alluded to it, why he brought it in, that kind of negativity, while he's been interviewed for FAI TV. I just think maybe he should have kept that to himself. You know, he was asked questions, rightfully so, in the press conference afterwards about Ireland display. He even admitted himself that the team didn't keep the ball, and he was very disappointed about that. So he was upfront about it, but I don't know why this negativity thing has raised its head. It's now, of course, it's the talk of Geneva ahead of the match tomorrow.
Yeah. Just one question before you go, John. As we mentioned at the outset, Ireland need one win from the remaining two games. Do you think we're going to get there?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. From what I've seen from the Swiss the other night, it's a game they should have won. Schmeichel was absolutely brilliant in goal the other night. It's a game they should have won, but they're vulnerable towards the latter stages of the game. We saw that in the 3-3 draw. We saw it in the match that you did commentary on, Adrian, yourself, in the home match where McGoldrick got that late equaliser. They're vulnerable the other night in Denmark. And Fabian Schär actually said after the game that this is part of the aspect of the game that we need to clean up. They haven't beaten any of the leading contenders in this group yet so far ahead of these games. They've only beaten the likes of Gibraltar and Georgia. And we've got two pops of this. I think tomorrow is the game that we should go for. We should be here to look to get to win this game. Be positive on the ball. If Connolly's got to start up front, as Johnny has been alluding to, get somebody to get the ball to him and get a goal. We know we've only scored 5 goals in 7 matches or something like that as well. So if we win tomorrow, we qualify. So we've got 2 pops of this. I think we should be positive and try and get the win here. Mick says he'd be happy with a draw, but then you're leaving it to the last match, last saloon.
2 draws is no good to us, John.
No, 2 draws is no good. So go for the win. That's what they have to do. I think so anyway.
Okay, John, listen, we leave it there. John on duty on Tuesday night. Game on 2FM, an extended programme with Marie Crowe, John Kenny and Kenny Cunningham on commentary for Switzerland against the Republic of Ireland. Would he go for it, Johnny, tomorrow night, Mick? I mean, in one sense, you could say there's nothing to lose. I mean, why would you play for a draw? I mean, obviously, he can't go all-out attack, gung-ho, have to sit in and bide your time.
He's got to obviously set out a plan. And as you said, he can't go gung-ho and leave us open. I think if we ask the Swiss a few questions, you know, and we get at them, get on the front foot early on and have a right go at the start, ask them a few questions. Don't let them get a stranglehold on the game and be dictating the game and running us around the pitch. As I said, I think this team is quite capable of keeping the ball, playing it through the thirds, getting it up and down the pitch and keeping good possession. So I would think to have a go early on and not let them get a stranglehold on it. We're quite capable of causing an upset over there, absolutely. And as I said, a set piece could be vital in this game. But have a go. Ask them the questions. As I said, the players will be 100% behind Mick. Now, it's the plan. It's plan A, plan B. How we do it. Who does it for us. How we attack. You know, when do we attack? Who attacks? Who sits off? So everyone will need to be nice and clear. And you know, the clarity will have to be there. We might need a little bit of luck. But once everyone knows their jobs, the players will absolutely be behind what Mick is trying to do. And as I said, I think we've a good chance. And I think you're right to have a go tomorrow night, because if we don't have a go and we lose it in the last kick of the game against Denmark or something, and it's a draw and we go out and goal difference or whatever it might be, have a go tomorrow and get confidence out of the game, whether that confidence is qualifying or coming out of the game or a result, and being really, really confident going into the Denmark game, because we don't know what's going to happen over the next 2 games. But I would definitely have a go from the start. I don't mean leave us nice and open, press them high and let them play it round, but let's play up in their half or their last third. Don't let them be having us pinned us back, and that when we win it back, we've got to go 50 or 60 yards to create something.
Okay, we'll see what happens. James, you have a theory, and it's an interesting theory around the negativity vibe. The under-21s going so nicely. Very good nil-all draw in Tala with Italy last week. Like a game Ireland really should have won, given the chances created, and obviously the sending off of Troy Parrott didn't help the Irish cause. But you've got a theory which results from the fact that a lot of people are looking at the way Stephen Kenny's sides are playing these days, the under-21s, and he's come in as breath of fresh air, and the players seem to be playing with real abandon. And perhaps Mick McCarthy is watching all the vibes about that and then comparing it to the reaction to the Georgia performance.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think there's such a buzz around the under-21s at the moment. And the way they played the other night was just, it was, as I said, it's the first time I've sat down to watch Ireland versus Italy game and thought, actually, there's no way we're going to lose this. In fact, we should be winning it. They, as far as the ability on the ball, the chasing down on the ball, the chances they made, Italy had one or two chances and that was it. Their goalkeeper made 3 or 4 really. Malumbi's free kick in particular, like, if it's anywhere else it goes in the net, it's just that it's hit at the keeper and it's just quick reactions. And I think that kind of buzz was leading into this game, where people thought, oh, we're going out there, we're going to win anyway. And then they see that game and it's so negative compared to what we saw just 48 hours prior to that. But that's the way that Stephen plays. That's the way Stephen plays. He's got a load of young lads who, as we're saying, like, they haven't really qualified for it before at under-21 level. The standard at under-21 level hasn't been great for many, many years. Be that whether the tactics they've used or what have you, the way they've played. Whereas Stephen now trusts these guys, and now these guys trust him as well to go and play the way they're playing. And I think that positivity kind of led into the game against Georgia. And because the game against Georgia is so flat, I think that's where some of the negativity has come from. I think that's where it's built up from.
Johnny, what do you reckon?
Love to see these players coming through. You know, like Connolly, as he was, and Troy Parrott. You know, great to see them. They're the future for us going forward. And if Stephen takes the job on, he's already worked with these players, so he'll have a great rapport with them going forward.
You said if.
Depends on what happens with Mick and him. You know, if Mick qualifies us and we get there tomorrow night with a result, a win tomorrow night, does Mick keep the job? It's Stephen's job and contract. I don't know what's going to happen, but let's qualify. Let's,
okay.
You know, as I said, going forward, if Stephen has this group of young players, a good report on coming through. For me, but the 21s is a big step up than to the senior on all aspects of football. It's, you know, down to what we're talking about here, down to media. It's a different animal dealing with the media at under 21s and dealing with the media at senior level. Results and matches at senior level, you know, results and matches at 21 level. I'm surprised that people, I'm delighted that Stephen is in the position, you know, that he's in, but I'm surprised that people will think that Stephen's gone away with a magic wand when he takes the job, or if he takes the job, and change our style of play and we play like Brazil. I don't think he will. I think when he gets there, you know, he'd play with what he has, and, you know, his style of play is offensive.
Yeah.
But going into the senior level, you can play offensive and you know, not get results, and then that'll come back, you know, come back on you as well. But I don't see Stephen waving a big magic wand and us being brilliant.
So you reckon that people are expecting too much that Stephen Kenny's so, going to deliver
I'm just trying to be fair to Stephen here, and I'm not, but I just think people think, oh, Stephen Kenny's going to come in here and it's all going to be lovely and rosy in the garden. It won't.
But is that because they've watched what he has done with the under 21 so far, playing this crisp, quick, incisive passing football? Compared to previous under 21 regimes, perhaps.
Yeah,
arguably.
And that's the way Stephen's principles are. That's the way he plays.
A la Dundalk and Derry City.
Yeah. And don't mean to be rude about this either. These people who are talking about the under 21s being, oh, they're a breath of fresh air compared to what they used to be. There's very few people used to go and watch what they used to be. Do you know what I mean? It's only now that we're seeing them on the television and the hype behind Stephen Kenny that people are getting to see what they are now. Like, what they used to be, very few people. Like, what are we talking? Maybe 2,000 people at a match compared to 7,200 the other night. The buzz is there. It's a bit unfair as well for them to be compared to the others and what have you. But as Johnny's saying, step up to senior management and expect it to just, there we go, lads, off we go. Like, you have a panel there. You're gonna, if the step up wasn't so big and the under-21s are playing so well, why wouldn't you just bring the under-21s? To play these games.
It's
you know
a
what
huge
I mean?
Step up.
That's the step is so big that we don't quite understand it.
And it's all about results, and it's all down to finance, and it's all about the association qualifying. You know, the financial aspects of that, you know, the money filtered down all the way through the grassroots level, all that's that we spoke about on recent shows. But it's all about qualifying and getting us in and getting the finances. Yeah, I've no doubt with Stephen coming in, he will bring his Midas touch to the Ireland Police Guard if he comes in, as I said, or when he comes in, because I don't know what's going to happen. But it's going to be a big step for him. It really is. And so it's a bit like putting all the pressure on Connolly tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't put all this pressure on Stephen. He needs to be let at it as well.
Yeah, it may take a little bit of time. Now, the women's team made it 2 wins from two, a 3-2 victory over Ukraine. A great start for the new head coach, Vera Poe. That was at Tallaght Stadium. And that is one of your misses, James, of the week.
Yeah,
why
it's
so?
One of my misses, not the actual game itself. The game itself was brilliant. The first goal for Katie McCabe was just an unbelievable goal from start to finish, the way the ball was moved so quickly around the pitch. And Regina Rihanna getting in and passing it back. It was absolutely wonderful, wonderful goal. But my miss of it is that we were told all week that this was a sellout. All week we were told sellout, record crowd, absolute sellout, no point coming to Tala. And then we see that the people who did get tickets didn't act on their tickets or just didn't bother turning up.
Mm.
And I feel it's such a shame because it was such a good game of football. Now, there still was a record crowd for a women's game.
Same with the under-21s. Yeah. We were told it was going to be a sellout.
But even the under-21s, 7,200 and so only 800 people didn't turn up for that. But you've got nearly 3,000 people didn't show up to Tala for the women's game. And me in particular, I didn't have a ticket for the match. I wanted to bring my two daughters over to watch it. It was sold out, so there was no point in me bringing them. And it's an awful shame. And I know people are going to say, the FAI have said this is sold out, blah, blah, blah. You can't pin it on the FAI this time. Because the FAI, the season tickets, they have access to print off their tickets. One can only suggest that the tickets were printed off and people didn't show up. And then on the night, it's not as if you can throw the gates open just in case those people show up. But it's an awful shame, I feel, that whoever printed off their tickets or whatever happened, the situation that they didn't turn up, that they didn't turn up that night, because it was a great game of football. Yeah. It was a wonderful atmosphere and a great win again. As you said, 2-2. What more could you ask from the senior team? They're playing really, really well. And again, as you said about Aaron Connolly, they're all playing with great confidence.
Really are. Yeah, it's something the FAI really need to look at, isn't it, Johnny?
Yeah, I was listening to the different aspects on the radio, as you said, James. So season ticket holders, they probably didn't think it completely through. And, you know, some people just said, we'll accept the tickets. We'll take first call on that one. They just didn't turn up on the day. I think if it was done again, they definitely would fill
it. I think way around it maybe is put a limit on how many season tickets can get a ticket. So, for instance, if you say, like, there's an early bird offer here, first 2,000 season tickets come back, that's it, done, and then we have 6,000 tickets for general sale. I think if they do it that way,
do you know what I mean?
Then that way your 2,000 people are going to jump on it, early.
I think you're right in what you said in relation to people going, there's no point in me even looking for a ticket,
sold out.
And I think, you know, there was a lot of people would have had that thought process.
I don't know exactly. I don't know unless there's something put in place. As I said, you can't blame the FU on this. People, it's just natural. People just don't turn up. And unfortunately, it was that game they didn't turn up for.
Now, we're staying with the women's game for your hit of the week. Yes. What a hit it was.
Oh, smashing. I don't know if you've seen this, Johnny, but Rebecca Cook's goal for Shelburne against Piemont. If you haven't seen it, I put it on my Twitter account last night, and it is just ballooned. It was unbelievable. It's such a good goal in what was such a vital game. Lose the game, Piemont win the league. And now the win, Shelburne getting the win out there, puts them 2 points behind, a couple of games to go, keeps the league going till probably the last game. I know Shelburne, I think, played a Wednesday before Piemont played a final game. But it keeps the league going. But not only does it do that, but it sets up Wednesday night semi-final between the two.
Yeah.
Even better. It's going to be a cracking game out there on Wednesday evening. But it is some hits from...
Throw in
on the far side and on the dugout side, and into the middle. It's like, do you know who does
Johnny's
this?
Johnny's on the move here now.
This throwing all the time. Dundalk do this all the time to Patrick McElhenney, where he goes forward and then spins off and comes back in
on the inside.
But as it spins, it bounces and she turns, has a quick look, and just hits it for the far corner, and it just goes off her foot. And as soon as it's left her foot, it's a goal.
Well, I know Rebecca because I know our granddad Martin Cook, he's down with Belvedere Rush, he's the treasurer there, and Rebecca sometimes goes down and trains down with Belvedere, so I know her and I'm delighted for her.
It's a cracking goal. And you see goals like that and some people kind of go, she just swung it or whatever, but she absolutely means it. She has the little look up before she hits it, and it's
she's been in and out of the international scene as well, you know, so that's going to give her a big boost.
Massive boost.
And a first defeat of the season, as you say, for Piemont United, and Shells close to within a couple of points, and as you say, they meet in the Cup semi-finals. One of the results in terms of the league, Limerick 2, Cork City 3, Saoirse Noonan converting a 94th minute penalty to give Cork the win. In fact, she scored two penalties in that game. And also the other Cup semi-final, as mentioned, Wexford Youths winning 4-2 against Galway, so the defending champions Wexford into the final on the 3rd of November. Now then, let's move it along to the Airtricity League of Ireland, the SSE Premier Division, and a big win for Bohemians over Dundalk by 2-1 at Dalyman Park on Friday night. Dundalk's long unbeaten domestic run comes to an end, dating back to the 12th of April, beaten 2-1 on Friday night by Keith Long's side. And afterwards, I caught up with the Bows manager, Keith Long.
I think we deserve to win. You know, the game plan worked very, very well for us. Dundalk are an exceptional side. Full of talented players. They're on course for a treble this year. It wasn't the case that they would have reset their targets. They would have tried to win the league with maximum points and points record. So they weren't coming here, you know, not trying to win the game. So it was very pleasing from our perspective that, you know, the boys carried out the instructions to a T, and to a man, I thought we were outstanding. But it's a great 3 points, great to follow up last week's victory, like you said, to bounce back from the semi-final defeat here against Rovers, because we were really disappointed in terms of our performance on that night, you know. So, you know, we're getting a little bit closer, two games to go. we 5 points differential between ourselves. Derry 8 points on St. Pat's. There's still a little bit to play for, so we've got to make sure that we're focused and ready to go next week again.
Yeah, that's the key thing, isn't it? You're almost there, almost there now.
Yes, well, listen, Derry and Pat's have to play each other. They've got 3 games left. We've got 2 games left. It's in our hands and it's in our control, and we can only try and look after ourselves.
Yeah, that's Keith Long. So Bowes just need a point from their last 2 games to secure European football. They're off to Inchicore on Friday night. Dundalk suffering their first defeat since April. Interestingly, they employed 3 at the back on Friday night, and afterwards I caught up with their boss, Vinnie Perth.
We've earned the right to be able to try something and see, you know, is there something we can learn ahead of next year? And I think, to be fair, work to a point in terms of them 3. Further up the pitch, we struggle a little bit, and that's disappointing, but... It was a good learning night for us, and we've learned stuff. And as I said, we did feel we could win the game with that system, and unfortunately, it just hasn't happened for us. But we kept going to the end, and we scored a late goal.
No manager likes to lose, of course, but could this be a positive in a bizarre sort of way, a couple of weeks out from the cup final, just maybe to refocus minds again?
No, I don't think the minds in any way. The guys were very determined tonight, and there was a real sense of we were at it. I think we started really well. I think we got going from the, as I said, the first 30 minutes we dominated the ball. I think we had over 75% possession in the first half. As I said, Bowes are very good at hurting on the counter attack. They did, gave themselves something to hang on to. No issue in that. Training has been brilliant all week, and it'll continue to be that good. Obviously, with the bodies missing, it's still being of a high standard. So we're in a really good place, and as much as the pressure's off, we're still driving each other on.
And finally, just a word on the injuries, John Mountney, and of course Patrick McElhenney. Will Patrick be fit for the final, or what's your read at this stage?
Yeah, they've all worked tonight. They've all been on the pitch before the game. So we fully expect everybody, as it currently stands, to be available and fit for the cup final. So we have used this week and last week as an opportunity. Again, Robbie Benson got 90 minutes. So it's important that people are building towards the cup final, and it's working so far.
Yeah, that's Vinnie Perth. Elsewhere, Shamrock Rovers 1, Finn Harps 0, Greg Bulger. So Harps consigned now really for the playoffs. Cork City 3, UCD 2. UCD not officially relegated, but as good as. Carl Shepherd, Darragh O'Connor and Conor McCormick with the goals for Cork City. And a first win under new manager Neil Fenn. Just going back to Bowes, Johnny, I had my doubts, and I said it to James on the podcast a few weeks ago. After they lost to Shamrock Rovers, I thought they were going to wilt and perhaps wobble on the running, but their response has been terrific.
Keith will definitely keep them on the front foot. He said it there, you know, they were so disappointed after the loss to Shamrock Rovers in the semi-final. But it's different if you're mid-table. They're pushing for Europe, and you know, that's... For them to get to Europe, it'd be like winning the league. And, you know, I'm sure that's what Keith had the players, you know, the thought process was there, and that's what was driving the Bowes players. A terrific win for them. Mm. Listening to Vinnie then as well, you know, playing a different system. Probably didn't sound too disappointed. Obviously, the league is obviously in the cupboard at this stage, the league trophy. But he's probably looking at different ways of playing for going forward. And I don't think... You know, I don't think it'll knock the Dundalk at all. Cup final is a great way of getting fellas minds right and getting fellas who were injured to come back from injury.
Everybody's fit for cup final.
So, I mean, the places will be up for grabs, and Vinnie will know that. But a big win for Bowes, you know. For all they've done over the last couple of years, I think they deserve, no one deserves anything, but I think they deserve a European spot, and I think they deserve a go at this. They're just not over the line yet. I think they go to Pats this weekend.
Yeah.
Tricky game for them. And, you know, if they can get this to bed as quick as possible, it'll be a fantastic season for Keith and for Bohemians getting to the semi-final of the Cup. Maybe finishing tour, qualifying for Europe. I think it's been a fantastic season. And it might just... cement things for Bowes as well, where Keith can say, look, a toy fella, a few fellas down for a couple of seasons and not have to chop and change at the end of every season, get it going again. That's really, really tough work and hard work for a manager or as a coach. So if you can keep that group together and add 1 or 2 or 3 to that, that's what Keith's plan will be going forward, I think.
And of course, Derry in 4th at the moment,
hanging on in there. I think I'm going to say it now, Bowes have qualified for Europe.
Yeah,
there's no question that after that result,
the hard work is done.
They're qualified for Europe. They've got to play Pats. Pats have to play Derry, and all they need is a point above Pats, and that's them done. Like, do you know what I mean? Pats do have the 3 games left instead of 2, like Bowes do. But I think Bowes are done. I think it's an absolute credit to Keith and the backroom staff there and Trevor and everybody of Bohemians right
and the
way
fans.
Down.
I always give the fans every time we come in, it's a brilliant place to go on Friday night.
Oh, the place was rocking
it's
on Friday.
Great.
It was terrific.
It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I think they deserve it. I think if a treble is done by Dundalk, and that's a big if, and hopefully it doesn't happen, but we all know my feeling on this treble now.
Oh, we're back there again. We're back in 1989.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he is the manager of the year. I think Keith Long is the manager
ahead
of the year.
Ahead of Vinnie Perth.
I think so.
Vinnie's fourth season coming in as a manager. He's treble.
I'm not going with that one now, James.
Even still, like he still has the same squad. I think what Keith has done
is
phenomenal. Yeah. What Keith has done is absolutely phenomenal. You look at his budget, the players he's dealing with. I think what he's done is absolutely out of this world. Great. I think they're qualified for Europe. I hope they beat Pats on Friday night. Derry then go to Sligo and beat Sligo on Saturday, and then that'll be your top four. Okay. And that'll be Europe done and dusted by Saturday evening, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Oh, there's no taking away from his achievements if they make it into Europe. Now, speaking of achievements, well done to Cavan Teely into the playoffs. A 1-1 draw with Longford Town on Friday night after extra time and all. Aaron Dobbs equalising for Longford after Paul Fox had given Cavan Teely the lead. And Stephen McGuinness proved to be the hero for Cavan Teely in the penalty shootout with a couple of terrific saves. So it's Cavan Teely against Drogheda United. We're going to hear very shortly from Tim Clancy. But great for Cavan Teely to be this close to making it to the Premier Division.
Are you ready? You know, the Wiley Devo, I'd say, you know, wouldn't write them off. You know, I wouldn't write them off. But it's difficult.
Still a long way to go, of course. Drogheda and Finn Harps.
Drogheda have to wait. Drogheda's trying to keep the momentum going. Cavan Teely have had the two games. And sometimes when you're on that bit of a bounce, it just gives you that little edge going into the competitive match.
Yeah, they have been playing since the league finished. Drogheda haven't. And I think this was it last Friday. It was 4 weeks since their league finished. So that's 5 weeks before that game takes place with Drogheda and now Cavan Teely. Now, I know Drogheda's played a couple of behind closed doors games against clubs and stuff like that, but they're just not the same as that. So it's all about form, it's all about positivity. And at the minute, you'd think Cavan Teely have it, but have they got it just to get over Drogheda? I don't know. But speaking to Ollie on Friday night, and he came out with a great stat that in the last 7 years, the first division team has won the playoff. So he's been trying to get his team up. He actually said it to me in the change room after the match on Friday night. If we're in the playoff, we are in for a big, big game.
Off camera or on camera?
Is this Ollie?
Ollie is as honest as anybody he should know at this stage.
Yeah. The power of positivity from Ollie to...
That's the way to think of it. Like, they can't let their head drop now because they know that the guys coming up who win this playoff are on a buzz and they're in a good run.
You know, logistics-wise, do we need another Dublin team to get into the Premier
League? Let's not go there for now,
anyway.
He's off, isn't he?
Drogheda,
they might just have a little bit for Cavan Teely.
Okay, I'll tell you what, let's hear from their manager, Tim Clancy. Tim recently signed a contract extension as manager of Drogheda, although he still harbours hopes of coaching in England. I went to United Park recently and caught up with him.
The goal from the start of the season was to try and make the playoffs again and try and improve from last year. We had a 4th place finish last year and we came up short against Finn Harps in the semi-final of the playoffs. So, listen, if you had been offered the start of the season, the playoff was the goal, so we would have taken probably 4th place again this year. But the way it played out, we were delighted to get second in the end.
You said you came up just short, and you did come up just short, but you had a big clash here at United Park with Shelburne. An opportunity to win that game and push it to the final day of the season, but they came here and won by 3-1. How disappointing was that night for you and for the players?
Yeah, it was a big occasion. It was brilliant to have a game of that magnitude in the First Division so late as well. Obviously from the outset, Shells were the heavy favourites to win the league, so I think everyone had their sights on them to try and get as close to them as possible. They went on an incredible run. They probably didn't have the best start that they probably would have hoped for, but they went on an incredible run midway through the season right to the end, and we stayed there for as long as we possibly could. And on the night again, getting it back to 1-1 with 12 minutes left or so, the place was buzzing, and we came up a little short. They went on and got the 2 late goals and deservedly so, went on and clinched the title.
Management, I mean, you've had a
a very, very busy playing career, particularly in Scotland with Kilmarnock, Motherwell, Hibernian, here at home with Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers, Bray Wanderers. At what point in your career did you think to yourself, yeah, I wouldn't mind trying coaching or management?
I think, probably early enough I would have thought that I wanted to get into coaching at some level. I didn't know like at what level or in what capacity in regards to being a manager or a coach, but I suppose the longer then my career in Scotland finished because I ruptured my Achilles with a day left in my contract when I was at St Johnstone, so moved back home. It's probably then I started really thinking about getting my badges done and looking further down the line. So I played here for, I think it was 3 years, and in that time I got my B licence and my A licence, and it was sort of the next natural step for me was to go into probably coaching. And ideally you probably want to go in underneath a manager and sort of learn the tricks of the trade and whatever else, but this opportunity came up and it's one that I spoke to my wife about, and I said, listen, it's something that I wanted to do, so probably wasn't ready for it at the time, but listen, I don't think you can turn it down because you might be waiting a long time before another job comes up, and thankfully it's gone pretty well the last couple of years anyway.
Why do you say you weren't ready for it perhaps at the time?
Well, I didn't have any experience. I didn't have any knowledge of the First Division, very little knowledge of the First Division, so Kev coming in was very good for me because he'd managed and coached in the league with Shelburne, and he knew a lot more of the players and the clubs and whatnot, so that was massive help for me embedding in as a manager. And listen, you never know if you're going to be ready or not until you actually start and get chucked in. I think probably Stevie O'Donnell's probably the same now. Pat's that he's gone straight in from his job at he finished playing Linda last season, and he was doing a good job at Dundalk as the opposition analysis. So he's probably thinking to himself, listen, again, you can't turn jobs like that down. He's gone in, I think he'll be very successful in there as well. But there just needs to be a time then for managers to be given to sort of learn on the job, and that's certainly what I've been doing here. And again, we're trying to improve each year, and this season we've managed to go a little bit better than we did last year so far, so we're hoping that we can just keep the improvements going.
You mentioned Kevin Doherty. You and Kevin have both agreed contract extensions, 2 more years here at Drogheda at United Park, and the club chairman Conor Hoey lavishing his praise of you, saying you're the best young manager in the league. It's a fair old vote of confidence, a 2-year deal.
Yeah, it was good to get sorted. Like, it was again coming to the end of my contract here, so it's difficult for me to sit down and try and tie players down for next year, and I didn't know what I was doing myself. And it's difficult for the players as well because they obviously want to know what's happening and who to be playing for and whatnot. So it's good to have the security of another 2 years, and it's sort of nice to hear the chairman saying good things about you, and it gives you the confidence that you're doing a good job. And but we know that there's still a lot of football to play this year, and the ambition for myself personally is I want to manage here in the Premier Division first, and hopefully get back over to the UK and professional football over there as well. So, but the short term goal is definitely to get Drogheda promoted, and I think we've got something good going on here. In the last season, I spoke to Shelburne about their position as a manager as well, but I felt that with what we had here, the young players and the makeup of the squad, I wasn't in any rush to get out of here, and I'm certainly still the same now, where I'm not in any rush to jump ship and go anywhere else. And I think that Drogheda have been very good to me, and I hope I'm doing a good enough job as well. Like, that they're happy with the appointment they made 18 months ago, and again, getting a 2-year deal, it's nice, it's a bit of security. It's not really a stable job, and in football in general, but especially as a manager, because at least if you're a player you have a contract for a certain amount of time, and if you're not doing well, you're just left out as a manager. If you're not doing well, you're literally pushed out the door. So it's good to feel wanted, and I hope I can repay the faith that they're showing me.
And can I just go back to something you said a few moments ago when you were talking about coaching and even the word ambition? You mentioned the possibility of going back to England. Is that something that's clearly in your mind, possibly returning to England as a manager or a coach?
Listen, it's a goal you'd set yourself. But obviously I'd want to do well and have a successful career in Ireland. If I never got to England, I wouldn't be disappointed if I stayed in the League of Ireland for my whole career and had a successful career. There's better managers than I am that didn't go over to England, whatever else, and it's not easily said than it's easier said than done. I'd like to get the opportunity at some stage, and it's certainly an ambition that I'd have, but it's not something that I'm saying it's going to happen, because I know it's going to be very difficult. I've obviously got contacts from Scotland in my time playing over there, so if something arose that way further down the line, I'd love an opportunity in that professional environment. And I think it's a different culture in the UK. Like, it's a proper footballing industry, and it's just, you know, 3 o'clock on a Saturday. It's just all structured, and it's something that I was involved in for 15 odd years, so or 12 years, sorry, over there, 13 years, and it's something I'd love to get back over and do again. But listen, I know that to even have a hint of going anywhere, you have to be very successful here, and that's what my focus is on.
That's Tim Clancy. Johnny, you know Tim very well. You manage Drogheda as well. Is it a difficult job for a young manager starting out at Drogheda?
Well, I'm just listening to his interview there. Really good interview. He's a lovely lad, Tim. He's a good way about him. You know, he's nice and calm. You can hear what he said. He knows the direction he wants to go in. He has a couple of year plan. He's a 2 or 3 year plan. Then he maybe have a 5 year plan. He knows what he wants to do. 2 year deal for him. All positive at Drogheda. You know, stability. He spoke about stability for him, his family, stability then once he's there for the players. He's not working under pressure situation. He can work and get stuck into the work. So long term plan maybe to go back and work in the UK. But he's a good lad, Tim, and he was up with us in DCU. He worked with us up there as one of the coaches. He started out there. And look, I've no doubt he'll do well. He's had a good two years of Drogheda, a good bedding in period now. So as I said, I think they might just have a little bit for Capantilli, and he might be able to kick on. And if he can get them up in the playoffs, it'd be a fantastic achievement for Tim.
Yeah, well, they're bound to, because Ollie says that the team in the first division always. Anyway, good luck to Capantilli, to Drogheda, and of course Finn Harris on the playoffs finally reached the business end. The result you can give us, James. Stenhouse Muir and Waterford in the Tunnocks Caramel Way for Challenge Cup. Who won?
Stenhouse Muir did. Gutting, absolutely gutting for Waterford. Stenhouse Muir scored 92nd minute.
I thought I'd catch out on that one. I thought I'd catch out. 3-2.
Yeah, 3-2. But the goal, it was just a mistake. I think I'd seen the goal. Like, it was live on Alba television the other night. And
you were watching.
Yeah. And the goal went just. They played so well, and then just in the 92nd.
TVs you have in your house? They've been watching Brazilian football, Argentinian.
My wife says to me all the time, if I could just knock some of this nonsense out of my head, I'd have room for other stuff.
Yeah,
well, but unfortunately, could be successful.
Yeah, she could be right. Actually be successful. Yeah.
On next week's podcast, we're going to do a lot more on the structures of the league. But of course, last week there was the gathering in Tala, the seminar on the future structures of the league. And what appears to be emerging is a proposal for a top six to break away after the second series of games. This is in 2021. Second group be formed by the bottom four in the Premier, accompanied by the top four from the first division.
That sounds like a very, very early amalgamation, doesn't it?
Yeah. Where do you stand on it all and the structures? I mean,
structures. First of all, what I think we need to do is we need to structure the stadiums, get the stadiums in order, right? We need to get a good, solid, you know, get the stadiums in order. I think the one division, I definitely do. I think whether it's 12, 16. Or 14, 16, it depends.
And you know, what makes you think that's the route to go?
I think so. I think because it gives everyone, you know, that it's not just based in Dublin, and I keep talking about that. You can have your west, you know, northwest, your Finn Harps, your Derry, your Sligo. You know, Galway could be in the mix there as well. I just think it's better, and maybe do it for a couple of seasons, 2 or 3 seasons. And I just think the 10 teams, it's just not enough. I prefer to have home and away, 2 matches, and I just think it's just better for everyone. It just gives everyone a bit of a chance. You know,
isn't the difficulty with that and what they're trying to eliminate is that there's so many meaningless mid-table matches in a, you know, if you had a 16-team
league.
There's
meaningless matches in a 10-team league.
But in the new proposal, isn't that what they're trying to get away from, that there's more competitive matches with the top six after the breakaway, and then the other ones, they're battling for promotion, relegation?
They brought top six in a good few years back as well now, so maybe we're adding on to the bottom four and the top four out of the fourth division. That definitely might help, add a little bit of spice to it. And it also, if you're in the fourth division and you're the manager, it gives you a real indication of where you're at with your group and your team. Are you at the level to be ready to be promoted as well? But it's important that there's a bit of life around the league, that you're not going, right, it's Dundalk and Rovers, And it's been Dundalk and Rovers this year with a little bit of Bowles added in. Nice little bit of stuff from Derry sometimes with their young group. Pats, Waterford, mid-table, Coventry's of the league, if that's what you want to call them. Seriously, it's been poor. And the rest then, the scrapping away for, Finn Harps and Cork and UCD scrapping away for relegation and playoffs. So we need to add a little bit more to that as well. And if it means bringing the extra teams in, yeah, I think bringing in, early, we used to bring the early doors with the League Cup and, building that into the season as well.
Yeah, I know we'll discuss this more next week, but I think it just leads then to a gamble race, this kind of thing, with clubs gambling financially to get into that top six and get in for hopefully for Europe and stuff like that. And I think there will actually be a lot. I agree with we should only if the league is there, if the league is strong enough to have a one league. Two games, because that way you can make every game an occasion. Like, you can't make Shamrock Rovers come to town an occasion if you know in 4 weeks' time Shamrock Rovers can be back in town.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So you can't make an occasion.
So home and
a
away, match. That's what I'm
so
saying.
So selling a match is tough. But again, with this kind of structure, I know the Welsh League do it as well. The Welsh League do this kind of thing, where anywhere from, I think, eighth in the position in the league can actually qualify for Europe. But then from seventh in the league can actually be relegated as well. So it's quite odd the way they structure it. I think they've gone the same way this year again with half and half structure as they go. Does it work? It was tried years and years ago and it didn't.
Tried in the North recently,
yeah,
haven't
he? It didn't work. And will it work again? Again, I think it was put out to you. I'd need to do more research
to
see.
Yeah, sure. We will return to it next week. But in truth, it's not the biggest challenge facing the league, is it, the structure? I mean, as you said, facilities and, there are much more pressing issues, surely.
It's a good chance, as I said, with all what's going on with the FAI, and it's a good chance for change to happen. And, Tim is talking about, a culture, in England, the games are 3 o'clock every week. You know where you're at, it's, whereas here, it can be a little bit all over the place. Whereas if we can put a good structure onto the league, whether it's Friday night, we end up a few years ago, matches Thursday nights, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. It's a business. We need to put it down that it's a proper business. You know what I mean? It's proper. It's
proper industry. Yeah.
Absolute proper industry, and that and by doing that, you need to be people to buy into that. You need people from outside to buy in, financially to buy into that as well. And that's why I'm saying, you need to set up the stadiums. You need to, and then you also need to have players coming through from the, and they've already worked on that with the 15s, 19s, 17s and 15s. I told you, don't agree with the 13s, but players coming through and feeding the league as well. Players might go away and that will supplement maybe helping the stadiums to be built and getting money and stuff like that. But I definitely think we should get the stadiums, get them organised and in industry, that's the word.
Yeah, and the All-Ireland League.
Oh yeah, Spice, I like it. Yeah, I would definitely think. I know we tried the cup up the
Setanta
Cup, and being involved in it, and it's been good. The All Ireland League brings its own problems with logistics or with administration and people being on boards and all that stuff. That stuff would all have to be ironed out, and it all have to be cleared up before you could even think about putting the All Ireland League together. But that might be a good 16 team league.
Okay, all right, listen, we'll explore that particular topic in next week's edition of the podcast. Good luck to the under-21s. And they're playing Iceland on Tuesday afternoon. Switzerland against the Republic of Ireland is on Tuesday evening, live on Game On and also on RTE2 television. And James, the live game this Friday night?
Is St Patrick's Athletic versus Bohemians.
Boy
the Camac, yes. Should be a good game. Just one ground I really like going to is Inchicore. I love how tight it is to the pitch. Sometimes the atmosphere is really, really good and should be good again on Friday night. It's a really good, nice place to watch a game of football.
Is my picture still on the wall?
Which one?
Alrighty. That's where we leave it for this edition of the RTE Soccer Podcast. Until the next time, bye bye.